and good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, dreary Wednesday, May the 11th, 2016. 12:14 coming up on 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but should we expect anything else out of this very dreary week? But the weekend, although looking a little chillier, will hopefully not have as much rain. Do want to tell you about today's program. Coming up in hour number two today, a very important program, as May is Stroke Awareness Month. In hour number two today at 1:15, we are going to be joined via telephone by Robert Guillaume. Robert Guillaume is the two-time Emmy Award-winning actor, star of the TV series Soap and Benson. He played Benson, and Robert suffered a stroke in 1999. So we are going to talk about his stroke and his rehabilitation over the last 17 years, and what you can do to prevent a stroke, and some stroke facts that you might not know about from the CDC. So stay tuned. That's coming up in hour number two. Hour number one is going to be a lot of fun because we're going to talk current events, and heaven knows there are a lot of those going out there. We're joined by a gentleman who's been on my program before. He is a former Marine, retired practitioner. He is was a teacher of journalism and has been that at Cincinnati and Dayton and Bowling Green and Central State. And we are so glad to welcome him to these microphones today to discuss everything going on in a world that seems to have a lot of news now. Emil Dansker. Emil, how are you?
Well, I'm in pretty good shape today and kind of standing by whether I can keep up with all the news that's breaking.
You know, Emil, when I was giving that, even though I never had you as a professor, knowing that you have done this for so long, when I was giving that intro, I thought, ooh, I wonder what the grade's going to be on that.
Well, you're okay.
Oh, okay, good.
You said it very well.
Good. I'm glad I passed the course today. Emil, I want to start out with a very... Well, is there anything on your mind that is striking you today in the news before I get on to my list?
Well, there is so much going on. There is some talk about the Republicans thinking about a third party at the convention in order to deal with the question of Donald Trump. And then there's the question of the situation of President Obama visiting Hiroshima, the first sitting president to visit Hiroshima. And, of course, I don't know that I have to explain what Hiroshima means.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because that is kind of a quandary in the news today, because I will bet you that if you tune in to radio stations and the news channels tonight, you will hear an awful lot about the Republicans' possible third party candidate, but you will hear very little about Hiroshima and President Obama.
That's an interesting point, and probably true. Hiroshima was a long time ago, and aside from the impact that it had and has, we sort of tend to forget it.
Well, why is it that stories like that do not hit the so-called broadcast news channels?
Say that again?
Well, why is it that I understand the age of a story like that, but why does that not get any coverage when it does get coverage in print media?
Well, I think part of it is that there are a lot of people much younger than I out there. I remember very well when it happened. I knew, of course, some of the, a lot of people who were involved in the nuclear situation. And of course, John Hersey's book on Hiroshima, you sort of couldn't get away from it. And then Norman Cousins dealing with the victims of radiation, but it sort of slid away in recent years.
Is it a story maybe that pundits cannot comment on? Is that the problem in television news today, maybe even more so than radio, is that if you threw that story out about President Obama and Hiroshima, I mean, you could say yes or no, should he go, shouldn't he go, but beyond that you don't have anything. Now you throw this third-party candidate up there and you can talk for 4 hours.
Well, that's very true, I have been a student, you might say, of presidential politics for a number of years, for a long time, writing in that field. I've attended 16 presidential nominating, national nominating conventions, and so I've been through all of this, and I've never seen anything like it. This situation with that Trump has created.
Well, then you're a good person to talk about this too. What has happened? Why did Donald Trump get the Republican nomination?
Well, I wish I had an answer for that. And there are a lot of people I think would like to answer that. I think he came out of the blue as something new, except of course he has his reputation to deal with. He's certainly been in the news for many years, and he sort of came out of the blue, and a lot of people weren't ready for that. And there were a lot of people out there. Of course, one of the important elements, I think, is that there are a lot of people out there who are dissatisfied with things as they are, and they grabbed him as a possibility. I think Sanders and Clinton are both too cerebral as compared with Trump.
Now, what does that say about the voting electorate? Because, it was the kind of the backdoor joke in newsrooms for years that the 25% of people who did vote in presidential elections were smarter or more educated or maybe just more informed than the 75% who didn't. But now we know that the 25% who will vote for Trump. They don't want the cerebral candidates.
Well, it does seem so. You've got a point there. It's easy when you have something to be against, and when somebody comes up and panders to that dissatisfaction, there are people out there who just grab it. In a sense, they don't think of anything else.
Well, at the risk of being called a Democrat, which I have, because this campaign, and I want to explain this again because I've had to do this a few times, and it's a strange thing, because as an unbiased journalist, I have covered presidential elections, not as many as you, but I've covered a few, and I've never been looped as being one party or another. But I just don't see Trump as a Republican. When I give a criticism of him, I don't think it's opinion, and I don't think it's bashing the Republicans, although people do take it that way. Because, I mean, when you say you don't know what the KKK is, you can't just let that go by.
Well, that's that takes me back, as a matter of fact. It would be a little bit different, I guess, but when Clarence Thomas was going through the selection process to the Supreme Court, and one of the senators who voted against him because he was asked about the abortion decision and the situation, and he didn't know. He didn't know about the Supreme Court decision relative to that. And this fellow said, if he doesn't know about that when he's going into court history, how can we elect him, select him as a justice? The majority was a small majority compared to many of the others over the years, but he did get enough votes to take a seat. And of course, he has, in my opinion, has not been very effective as a justice, Supreme Court justice. We have two daughters who are attorneys, and I've talked to one of them about this, and she is quite a supporter of Clarence Thomas. But that's another whole story. It could take us off on another whole tack here.
and maybe we'll get there by the end. But I do want to point two things out about Trump, because there are two things about him that I find interesting beyond what you said. Because I really do understand the outsider point of view. And I understand also that if anybody would have said in 49 states, who is Bernie Sanders, they probably would have not have known a year and a half ago. What I don't understand is is why can he say things like he doesn't know the KKK? He can call women dogs. He can insinuate that somebody's father helped kill JFK. He quotes the National Enquirer. He called the Pope disgraceful. How can he do that and still get the vote? That's what I don't understand. If he just came out and was new and energetic and fun to listen to and had good ideas, I get it. But the negative things that he does, shipping all the Muslims out, building the wall between here and Mexico, why is that appealing to people?
Well, it's because I think in a sense it's because it's easy. It's easy to look at him and look at him as something new and almost like Barbie dolls. It comes out, it's new, and you grab it. And of course, the way he sounds off, it's easy to say I agree with that when he sounds off, without really thinking about what that means.
But does the majority of this country believe that Muslim Americans should not be here and that Mexican Americans who are here with families should be deported and we should build a wall?
Well, there's that opinion, but I'm not sure how effective it is or how it means, what it means in the long run. It's just that we have a lot of people who take those positions.
Well, but apparently, see, that's what I thought. I thought, well, there are going to be some who like this idea, but apparently in the Republican primary voter makeup, it's the majority.
Well, it's I go back, as you say, I've had a lot of reading up, dealing with the presidential situations, and we go back in history, you find that some of the campaigns all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, there were people out there who said the most outrageous things and things that didn't make sense that attracted people. For example, William Henry Harrison, you know, whose mansion is in Vincennes, Indiana, my hometown, they set him up as a hard scrabble, a log cabin and hard cider. Well, he wasn't either of those. He came from a wealthy family in Virginia, and yet there were a lot of people who grabbed that and voted for him to a great extent because of that sort of an image that people were able to promote. In other words, we didn't have quite the wide media. We didn't have television then. We didn't have radio then. But there were things that were said about Lincoln, comparing to an ape, for example. Some of the bitterness that was essential, and we know that that newspapers, which were the largest part of the media then, almost the only part back then. Many of the newspapers were even owned by the political parties, or there were newspapers that were owned by the political parties. Sort of lasted until the years after Harding, after World War I. So, what do we say?
Well, when I'll tell you something else that is kind of interesting about it. Two other things.
You might turn up the volume a little bit there.
Okay, there we go. How's that?
A little better.
A little better. One of the things that was fascinating about this, there were 16 other people running for the Republican nomination. Most people said this was the most qualified, popular group of Republicans ever. How was he able to pick them all off?
Well, that's a good point. I look back to the previous campaigns, and you think that the various people who were running for office somehow or other, most of them had a wider knowledge than Trump has. I myself would not have voted for any of those Republican candidates, but They did represent experience. They represented concern, you would almost think that any of them would have been a more thoughtful candidate than Trump is.
And the final thing on this is now that he is the presumptive nominee, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, has said he's not ready to endorse Trump. They're having a meeting tomorrow about this. Bob Dole, long-term Republican, 96 Republican nominee for president, says he will go to the convention, but he will not endorse Trump. The two living Republican past presidents, Bush 41 and 43, say they will not go to the convention. They will not endorse Trump. And Romney, the last gentleman who was their nominee in 2012, says he will not go to the convention. He will not endorse Trump. And he will not vote for Trump. He said he'll find another candidate other than Hillary or Trump. How can Trump go on without the Republican Party support? I mean, he's won the primary, but now he's going up against the Democrats, going up against a popular sitting president, and Bernie Sanders will come around, I think, and support Hillary Clinton. How can Trump face that when everybody in the Republican Party will not even endorse him at this point?
Well, he's got gall, he's got nerve, he's a real estate salesman, and that'll get some response. He comes up and he does what he does, and apparently doesn't care what other people say because he's him. He does what he does. He does it well. After all, he's a billionaire, he states his positions, and there's a lot of people out there who don't think of anything but there's my boy. He's going to stand up to the fat cats, and there are people who are going to accept it just for that.
Now, that being said, let's jump over to the other side for a second, because that primary is still going on. Last night, Bernie Sanders wins West Virginia pretty handedly, but I think by all accounts his campaign, and even Bernie in his speech last night, knows that it's going to be very hard for him to get the nomination, a matter of fact, mathematically impossible at this point, away from Hillary. But why has he resonated against Hillary so well?
Well, one thing, he's different, and he is thoughtful, and he has been able to speak to young people, educated electorate, somehow or other he's managed to pick up a lot of the votes that even that Obama had when he ran for president. It's just that he's able to articulate a point of view that speaks to that part of the electorate that is more thoughtful.
Now, when we get on to Hillary Clinton, who looks like is going to be the presumptive nominee, she's already shifted her focus onto Trump. Trump has focused his opinion onto her.
I think I'm beginning to lose you a little.
Okay, but now that it looks like Hillary's going to be the presumptive nominee on that side, why is there such a negative favorability rating for Hillary? The only person who has a more negative favorability rating is Trump.
Yeah, that I don't understand. Well, I do and I don't understand it. The idea she apparently is, being a woman apparently has not been a problem for her, but my colleagues in the media who are looking for angles pick up on the negatives, and of course Congress, the House has picked up on the Benghazi problem situation, and there's so much, and of course her husband's reputation, she just somehow or other had, there's a part of the electorate that to which he appeals, even though there's also a lot of concern about her, whether she's trustworthy, for example. Some have even said she's crooked, and people will pick up on that, where they pick up on the sense of Trump and his negatives, turn into positives with the people who were unhappy with the system, and Hillary's reputation concerns, the my colleagues in the media pick up on that, gives them something to talk about, something to write about, and so here we are sitting here kind of on a cloud.
Well, and
I shouldn't use that term because the cloud has become a technical term.
Well, here becomes the interesting question then, because the negatives that people are picking up about Trump, they can show video footage to say that he has done. I mean, it's not hard to find a clip of him saying...
I'm losing you again.
They can find clips of what Trump has done to spur his negatives. In Hillary's case, it seems like everything is innuendo, and we want to deal in fact in the news. Is there anything she has done that you can think of or find that is absolutely factual that gives her this dishonest, negative, she's a liar, she's crooked, 57% negativity rating?
Well, I really can't. It's almost a matter of saying it's there. You know, there is an issue such as Benghazi. There is the question of what she did with tapes. There is the question of her husband's philandering and it's just too easy, in a sense, to pick up on those things and run with them. Like Benghazi, you for 2 years now that the House has been investigating, spent millions of dollars, brought in more than 100 witnesses, and have not been able to show anything definitive about any culpability on her part.
Well, and that being said, because you talked about her husband's philandering there, in a speech for the first time this past weekend, Donald Trump brought that up, but and he did it. I mean, we all know he did it. This is old news. But is that blamable on Hillary? If he was running against Bill, I guess I could get it. But is that negative to Hillary that her husband had an affair?
Well, people think it is. And if people think it is, if they're concerned, people just tend to run with those things. It's really, I'm not saying an awful lot here in that sense, but people tend to run with the negative.
But is, in your opinion, as a lifelong journalist, is that fair game?
Well, it's fair game in the sense that it's out there, that it's there. These are things that have Benghazi happened, for example, and reporters, my colleagues, go after an issue that they can run with. Whether it's fair, well, I think if you take the issue itself, the circumstances, you report or you recall what the circumstances were of that situation in Benghazi, you can run with that, and I guess that's fair. But if you pick up on it and use it simply as a negative element, that brings in the question of fairness.
I think,
you know, we talk about being objective, and I have felt for many years that there is no such thing as objectivity, because people have their own feelings. But what we in the press have to be able to do, have to cert to move to do, is to be fair and be accurate. We've already talked a little bit about fairness.
Well, and I think I'm with you on the fact that Benghazi, yes, that's fair game. I think the email thing is fair game. But Bill Clinton's philandering, is that fair game, hard news, or is that tabloid stuff?
Well, I think it's gossip. It's the kind of thing that's easy. It's easy to come up with. But I would question the amount of coverage that is given to that, and I'm not sure, actually, when I think about it, just how much there is. I think it's out there when it comes up, but I'm not sure how wide is the coverage.
Before we get back to the Republicans possibly running a third party candidate, I want to draw this picture. The election's going to come up. We now know, because of the Electoral College, that the Republican candidate pretty well has to win three of the battleground states, Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida. They have to win three of them. The Democrats do not. They really only have to win one of them to be solvent, because they pick up California and New York pretty easily. Now, even though Trump will get a lot of popular votes, and I think it'll be pretty close in the popular vote, much like Romney and Obama was close in the popular vote, when it comes to the Electoral College, is there any way that Donald Trump can defeat Hillary with so many Latinos in Florida, which almost writes him off there, and also a lot of Latinos in Texas and in Arizona, which are Republican strongholds, and the fact that the Bushes and Cruz are very popular in Texas, and Obama, or Trump, has trashed them, not to mention the fact that in the primary, Trump did not win Wisconsin, Trump did not win Ohio, Trump did not win Texas.
Well, I think that the point about the Latino vote, for example, even the black vote of women, is a pretty important point when it comes down to counting votes. And I think that Trump has, I wonder if Trump has sort of shot his wad on that sort of thing, that he sounded off so much for so long about that sort of thing. I wonder if it's become old stuff in a way.
The poll that I saw this morning, the Quinnipiac poll that came out Monday, showed that with non-white voters, he has a 76% negativity rating, and 76% of those people will vote Democrat.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot.
No, I hadn't seen that, but I know what Quinnipiac does. I first became aware of Quinnipiac in covering the conventions when they began their polling and their involvement some years back. So that's an interest. I had not seen that percentage.
If it stays that way, is there any way he can win?
Say that again?
If it stays that way, if he's not able to make up the gap between women and non-white voters, is there any way he can win?
I think I would say I don't think so. But then you never know how these things are going to come out.
Let's get back to the original point that they might be running a third-party candidate. They are looking for one. They won't say that, but they certainly are. The Republicans are. But wouldn't that hand the election to Hillary Clinton?
I think it probably would. Of course, I'm thinking how, to the extent that this is relevant here, but I remember the convention in which Jerry Brown was a candidate for president. I forget which year that was, but there was concern among, we called his delegates the Brownies, and there was concern that he was not going to be allowed to address the convention in prime time. And so the Brownies were very upset about this, and I was interviewing one of the Brownies, and I said, there are those who think that all you're going to do if you protest is just upset the convention. And she pointed her finger at me and said, we call it democracy.
Ah, well.
And I've never forgotten that.
And you know, Perot, people still say that President Bush 41 was very popular coming off the Iraq War, even though the economy was in some trouble, that if Perot had not been in there, he could have pulled that one off.
Yes, sir. Quite so. Of course, I can express opinions about that, but... We go through the conventions again, thinking back. You remember Gary Hart's problems, sexual problems, which seemed to have cost him the nomination at that time. There was a movement in San Francisco that I picked up as a reporter. There was a strong movement to get him to bring him back as a strong candidate, I reported that, and yet it didn't happen. So Gary Hart just faded away and lost his candidacy because of his sexual philandering situation.
Yeah. Well, and the kind of the period on that point is, yes, Donald Trump has attacked Bill Clinton's philandering, but I think it's also common knowledge that when he was married to Ivana Trump, that he was having an affair with Marla Maples, and I don't think he would deny that.
Yeah, and I had, it occurs to me, good point, I haven't seen an awful lot about that. Somehow it's been there, but I haven't seen an awful lot being made of his life, his situation.
And why is that? Is that the so-called liberal media just asleep at the wheel?
You know, I don't know. I wish I knew. The pundits will come up with something, but or it may be that there are people who feel that that's not important, and so they don't run with it. They don't deal with it, and that's where we run into the problem of the pundits. The columnists, and the things that they have to say. You know, and thinking back to something which, again, an interesting point of background, perhaps, that, you know, as I said, I grew up in a town William Henry Harrison had built his mansion, Grouseland. It's a good place for I recommend that people visit in Vincennes, Indiana, which is almost 100 years older than Cincinnati. And when Harrison ran for office, the Elihu Stout, who owned the newspaper there, who was brought to Vincennes by Harrison to start a newspaper, and it's interesting that I picked up in my reading the background of that election that Stout, even though he was a good friend of Harrison, did not support him for president, where his wife did. And of course, you know, women you might didn't account for much back in those days, but it was an interesting point of background in that you had the strong supporter of a presidential candidate on one side and the other negative, and those kinds of things just continued to happen.
If you at this point had to pick somebody that the Republicans could genuinely get who would accept doing it, who do you think would be the ideal person to be that third-party candidate?
Oh, I think, I don't know. When I try to run back, you know, there was recently the news that Trump was considering Carson as his vice president. When I look back, I don't know. I'd have to put the roster in front of me and probably make a choice that way. But I really don't. Well, of course, I have my history as a voter too, and I don't know right off that I can think of any of the candidates would have made a better candidate, I think, than Trump. But in terms of whether I would pick one of the others, I don't know.
The people who ran certainly would be up for that, I guess. But what about two people who come to my mind, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, who have done very precarious things during this election, not endorsing Donald Trump right off the bat, and have released interesting statements for people who say they don't want to be part of the action anymore. Well, Speaker of the House Ryan, he's part of the action, but for people who really want to appease what's going on, they don't mind getting on television and speaking their opinion.
Well, it would seem so, and yet Trump marches on.
He does march on. Has the media given Trump a pass on the issues? Because really, do you know how he's going to do anything that he says he's going to do?
Well, I think the answer probably is not exactly a matter of giving him a pass. It's that there is so much on the news that he makes, the things that he does that make good copy. The other stuff in there, you read. I read regularly. You know, the New York Times. Read the Christian Science Monitor, which I recommend, by the way. They will pick up on the issues. But these guys, in a sense, Trump sort of does his own thing.
Let's switch away from this just for a second. Facebook workers routinely suppress news stories of interest to conservative readers from the social network's influential trending news section, according to a former journalist who worked on the project. The individual says that workers prevented stories about the right-wing CPAC gathering, Mitt Romney, Rand Paul, and other conservative topics from appearing in the highly influential section, even though they were organically trending among the site's users. Facebook has denied that this happened. What do you make of that, Emil?
Well, I'm not a big user of Facebook. I still don't really understand it. But I don't. I saw that, and I just don't know whether there's any truth to that or not. I'm inclined to think that it's not likely that Facebook would do that. But I don't know. Interesting for a guy who's been in the media for 60 years, as I have, to keep saying I don't know.
Well, this is the touchstone of that story to me. The question that I would ask is, does Facebook have to be unbiased? Isn't it a public? Is it a news source?
Well, interesting. It does apparently does a lot of things. A lot of the stuff that Facebook has is entertainment. So, in terms of whether it has to be unbiased, one would think that in order to be responsible, if you're putting yourselves out there to be reporting and expressing opinions about what people think or should think, that there is a question of bias. And of course, I'd said earlier, you know, that I'm one who feels there is no such thing as objectivity. The thing to do is to be fair and accurate. And if Facebook says that it's being fair, it's accused of being unfair. Whether they're accurate, I don't know.
But I've never heard Facebook claim they were a news organization.
Say again?
I said I've never heard Facebook claim that they were a news organization. So
that's right. I have not either. So I've not been aware of that. I keep getting Facebook things and Facebook, and I'm not sure quite what to do with them. I just got two or three of them today from Greg Cordy, who covers the White House for Scripps Howard, who was one of my former students. In fact, he was with me at a couple of the political conventions. And he's done, and he's former writer for the Inquirer, which is Cincinnati is his hometown. So he's covering the White House now, and he sends me two or three or four things every day or every other day. Not an awful lot of substance, but one of the things he brought up today was a question about whether it's a good thing for the president to go to Hiroshima, and that's just a question.
Now, just the to put a period on this Facebook thing, could Facebook be any less biased than Fox News or MSNBC?
Any less?
Yeah, I mean, would they be any more, would they be any less biased than those groups that do claim to be news organizations?
Well, again, that's a good question. I would think that fairness is an issue whenever you put yourself out to public and say this is what I think or this is what I do or what I don't do. There's something to be said for having to face up to that concern. But I don't think either that I've seen them set themselves up as a news organization. And of course, when you take a look at the others, even CNN and there's always a concern about how. And Fox, for example, as to how fair they are. The whole thing is it's almost like a mishmash. You look at the world, and you have so many people coming from all different directions. We don't have Walter Lippmann anymore. We don't have the Alsops anymore. There are people who just we don't have Westbrook Pegler either, for that matter. But you just well, you put yourself out there and you stand by to take the heat.
I want to give you a story here, Emil, before we end this hour. This has been a fascinating hour. I've enjoyed this. But this is, to me, a blueprint for the media in 2016. This was 2015. The incident happened. Last year, there was an article posted on a website that named Marion, Ohio, where we are, as the dumbest city in Ohio. Now, I went to the website. I wish I could remember the name of it right now, but I went to the website, and the next day after that article came on, Nick Johnson, who wrote the story, I had him on the website, or on the program here. Nick told me that article was purely based in comedy, that his website is comedy, if you read any of his other articles, and all he did, he doesn't live in Ohio, he think he lives in South Carolina, and that all he did was count the number of bars, the number of libraries, and the number of men in each town, and that's where he got that statistic. Now, interestingly enough, people in Marion, to this week, have quoted that to me as a factual story.
A factual story.
Because they believed it, because it was on Facebook. It was out there, and they just read the headline. They didn't bother to follow up to see where it came from. They didn't... it's almost like they wanted to believe it. It's a very strange world.
Well, yeah, there's so much out there that one has to wade through. I'm not sure, you know. I mentioned the Christian Science Monitor, which I think is, if there was only one news source, it ought to be the Monitor. Speaking of being fair and accurate, and I always said that to my students and others. But it's tough with the massive material that's out there. The commentators, the pundits, the columnists, you don't know where to go anymore. You sort of put the covers over your head and wait to see what's going to happen. But on the other hand, it's like the Brownie said, we call it democracy in terms of being able to express ourselves.
Do you think in 2016... that the average news consumer, or the majority news consumer, views the Christian Science Monitor just like Facebook, just like Gawker, just like TMZ, that they're all accurate, they're all on the level?
That people see that?
Yeah, do people believe
that they differentiate?
Yeah, is there a differentiation today?
I think that... Wow, that's a tough one. You almost have to go back to the kind of people who vote for Trump. the Monitor doesn't have the circulation that I wish it had. But I don't know how many people out there really make that differentiation. For one thing, enough people I don't think see the Monitor and see what it does. And other times, people do have a tendency. A lot of what's behind what we've been saying here, sort of, is people do tend to accept what they already believe.
That's exactly
right. If the publication comes out and says something, or Trump says something, and they believe it, they believe it.
Well, it seems to me,
without thinking about it.
Well, it seems to me what I have noticed is people believe what they believe, what their values are. If the story fits their values, then it's truthful no matter what.
There is a tendency to that. Unfortunately, that people are not that that discerning. Jefferson said that he would support newspapers, and has said that in our democracy, the basis of it is to put the information out there so that people can make their own decisions. And as a basic principle, I subscribe to that. But at the same time, that brings back another story, and that is recalling one of my favorite professors, the late Jack Scheer, at Northwestern. I went to see him on one of my leaves from the Marine Corps, and he was sitting there so sad. He'd always been very overt. Nobody knew that he was had terminal cancer at the time, but he said to me, you know, I always thought that mass communication would be the answer because the truth could get around so fast. And he said, you know, I have found out that a lie can get around just as fast or faster.
Emil,
and that's what Jack Scher said.
Emil Danzer.
Mass communication is supposed to put everything out there so we can make decisions, but the other information, whether it's a lie, goes around just as fast.
Emil Dansker, legendary professor of journalism here in Ohio and in the journalism profession for more than 60 years. This has been a lot of fun. We're going to have to do this again sometime real soon, Emil.
I look forward to it.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Emil Dansker, going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. Robert Guillaume right around the corner.
You know, it's interesting because everybody knows the story, obviously, of